As I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with, the Sergeant Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Pastor Sean Winters from the Wooddale Church in Eden Prairie. And then today we are doing the Pledge of Allegiance.
Our dear Heavenly Father, Lord of mercy, we rejoice today in you. You are good and loving and powerful. Your arm set stars in place and wove our bodies together. We rejoice because you hold the nations together in your hand, and we ask that your gracious hand will be with this gathered group here today. We know that you care for us, and we rejoice in that. Your goodness and your grace we experience each day. When we wake, your mercies give us a fresh start. When we confess our sins, you're faithful to cleanse us once again. When in need, you rescue, and when alone, you comfort. When lacking wisdom, you supply. And so I pray that you give patience, persistence, and courage and wisdom to what lies ahead of us and this group here today. We rejoice that you've ordained prayer and that we can call to you and you hear us, that we can intercede for others, that you hear and you act, sometimes teaching, sometimes convicting, other times bringing restoration, but all the time, Lord, your hand of blessing. We thank you for hearing our prayers today, and I pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
We'll salute the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Appreciate it. Yep. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fishbach, Phoebe, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Coring, Kubli, Langseth, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Pariseau, Pogemiller, Pretner, Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vanderveer, Vickerman, Wieger.
Quorum is present. First order of business is executive and official communications. They are printed on today's agenda. Next order of business is reports of committees. Senator.
Mr. President.
Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the reports of the committees printed in the agenda be adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Next order of business, second reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of Senate bills. Next order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's agenda. Without objection, first reading of Senate bills. There are two authors' motions today on the agenda. Without objection, we'll take them as one motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Olsen, do you have a motion to?
Mr. President, I would move that Senate File 1654 be withdrawn from the Committee on Education and re-referred to the Committee on Transportation. Mr. President, the six-word synopsis is that it's related to conformity with the national standards on school bus safety, and I think it's more appropriate in transportation. Thank you.
On the Olsen motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Dibble, do you have a motion to make?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate File 1990 be withdrawn from the Committee on Health, Housing, and Family Security and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Okay, we've been asking people to give about a 5 or 6 word brief description of.
Thank you. This establishes some resources for about 4 programs in the Department of Health. and it more appropriately belongs in the Finance Committee. Both chairs are aware of this move.
Okay, on the Dibble motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. There are a couple of resolutions on, printed on today's agenda. Without objection, they will be referred to the Rules Committee. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I move this that Senate concurrent. You're on motions now, Mr. President?
That's correct.
Senate concurrent resolution number 6 be taken from the table.
That's the joint rules, is that correct? Okay, on the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I move the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate concurrent resolution number 6 and that resolution be readopted as amended.
Okay, you want to tell the body, Senator, what changes took place?
Yes. Mr. President, members, the House made an amendment related to capital letters versus boldface, and I think we can work with that. In addition, they made some technical changes related to adding the Finance Committee in on some deadlines. I think those are good amendments. They added some technical wording on line 6.17, something about made available for introduction. This relates to the governor's budget, and I think it just clarifies that change in the rule. On page 7, I think it's line 712 now, with regards to conference committees, they've added some language that the intent would be to provide 24-hour notice for conference committees. And we've kind of explained to them that that's not overly workable, but it does say with the intent, so that's we can probably make that language work. And then finally, with regards to the Board of Regents selection language, I think the Senate language said that you were supposed to just make one recommendation. I think their language adds language that says that you make recommendations on vacancies. So theoretically, that makes the possibility that the joint committee between the House and the Senate could make more than one recommendation per regent. Theoretically, I don't know that they would do that, but that's what that language might allow. So I'd move renew my motion, Mr. President.
Okay, any discussion? Senator Pogermiller renews his motion that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to the Senate concurrent resolution number 6 and the resolution be readopted as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Okay, now you have to make another motion to adopt.
Mr. President, then I move that Senate concurrent resolution be now adopted.
Okay. Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted. We don't have to. All right. All senators having voted, desire to vote. See, we got the votes and the score here. I think they know how they voted, Mike. Okay, we're going to retake the vote. There was a improper description on the bottom of the board. Is that all right now? Okay, please vote again. Members, this is a redo of the vote we took about 5 minutes ago. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. In 46 ayes, 21 nays, the resolution is adopted.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, on motions, I move that we take up the Senate calendar.
On the motion to take up the calendar, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. First bill on the calendar is a Vanderveer bill, Senate File 1091. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 1091, a bill for inoculating the transportation, restricting weight limits on the Stillwater Lift Bridge.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, secretary will close the roll. There being 67 ayes, 0 nays, the bill is passed and state agreed to. Remind the members there will be, looks like, 6 more votes, so I would suggest you stay seated. The next bill we're considering on the calendar is Senate File 643. This is a Senator Sharon bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 643, a bill for an act relating to unemployment compensation, providing eligibility for benefits under certain training programs.
Secretary will take the bill.
Roll.
All senators having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. There'll be 67 ayes and 0 nays. The bill is passed and state agreed to. The next bill on the calendar, Senate File 1012, the Senator Anderson bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 1012, a bill for an act relating to state government appropriating money for environment and natural resources.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 67 ayes, 0 nays, the bill is passed. It's title agreed to. The next bill on the calendar is Senate File 1904. This is a Scheid bill. Senator Scheid, the secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 1904, a bill for an act relating to insurance, regulating continuation coverage, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators Paul Pickle. All senators having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. There being 67 ayes, 0 nays, the bill is passed and it's title agreed. The next bill on the calendar is Senate File 1454, Senator Saltzman's bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 1454, a bill for an act relating to unemployment insurance, providing for a shared work plan, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. Saltzman. All senators having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. There being 67 ayes, 0 nays, the bill is passed, it's title agreed to. The next bill on the calendar is Senate File 550. This is a Prentner-Solon bill. Secretary We'll give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 550, a bill for an act relating to energy, providing for energy conservation, regulating utility rates, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 52 ayes, 15 nays. The bill is passed and it's title agreed to. The last bill on the calendar is Senate File number 10. This is a Bonif bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 10, a bill for an act relating to education finance requiring school districts to use shared services and make purchases through the cooperative purchasing venture, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 34 ayes and 33 nays. The bill is passed and it's title agreed to.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, on motions, I move that we take up the Senate calendar.
On the motion.
General orders. General orders.
On the motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
I move the Senate to now resolve itself into Committee of the Whole for the purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
On the motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President, I'd like to designate...
The committee will come to order, and I will appoint Senator Betzel as the chair for at least the first bill. He'll be right back.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to designate Senate File number 3131, Senate File 58... Senate File 1486, number 58, Senate File 489, number 59, and Senate File 462, number 46. And I'd like to yield to Senator Berglund.
Senator Berglund.
I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 3 be recommended to pass.
Kate, before we recognize the motion, please describe the bill. Senator Berglund.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, I thought we did that afterwards. This is a mandate reduction bill. There's been a lot of work going on in various committees to try to help our local units of government, be they school districts, counties, cities, townships, or others, to eliminate things that may not be necessary in order to protect the health and well-being and to promote the functioning of our local units of government. And this bill is a bill that has brought all of those pieces of work from various committees together so that we can, without having any impact on our budget, give relief to them in areas that cost them money or are in other ways burdensome to them. So I am very happy to have a wonderful cast of authors that are working on this with me, and I'm going to yield to each of them to describe sections of the bill and to make technical and other amendments. I'd first like to yield to Senator Scogin to discuss the education article.
Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Berglund. And Mr. Chair, I would move the A-12 amendment to get the education portion into the shape we need it in.
The Secretary will report the A-12 amendment.
Senator Scogin moves to amend Senate File 3 as follows. Page 2, delete Article 1 and insert Article 1, Education. This is Amendment A-12.
On the amendment, Senator Scogin.
Well, this is a very comprehensive amendment in that we ended up with some wrong language in the Rules Committee, and so this is a delete all that you're looking at, but it brings the bill back into the shape that we wanted it in when we came out of Rules. We just had some wrong language, and so this is putting the bill in the shape that we needed in to present it as a mandate reduction bill.
Is there discussion on the A-12 amendment? Seeing none, the question of Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, thank you. Could Senator Scogin maybe explain what this amendment is all about? I'm still trying to catch up, but maybe a brief description?
Senator Scogin.
Mr. Chair and Senator Senjum, gladly. Once again, we had the wrong language when we were in Rules, and so this is a lead all to bring it back into the shape that we need it in. And if we pass the amendment, then I'd gladly walk through section by section and explain what we have added to the mandate reduction bill.
So discussion on the A-12 amendment. Senator Fischbach.
Well, Mr. Chair, that's not really an explanation. I think we deserve to know what's being changed in the amendment before we vote on something.
So you're asking for a description of the amendment before us, okay?
Yes.
Senator Scogin, you've been requested to explain the amendment.
Mr. Chair and Senator Fischbach and members, well, we ended up, when you talk about language that was changed, let me just walk through it quickly. Section 1 eliminates the requirement of a school board to actually publish their annual report on curriculum, instruction, and student achievement. They are required to publish a summary. Also eliminates the requirement of school boards to make copies of the report available to the public inspection, and eliminates a requirement to send that copy to the commissioner. Section 2 talks about some cross-references, eliminates cross-reference relating to the requirements for assessment professionals. Section 3 is budgets, a form of notification, eliminating the requirement of a school board to publish its revenue, expenditure, fund balance, and other relevant budget information. Instead, again, they're required only to publish a summary. Section 4 will eliminate the annual report identifying the expenditures that a district is required. Section 5 increases the threshold from $250,000 to $500,000 for a project's estimated cost that requires a school district to consult with the commissioner. And Section 6 also changes the threshold from $500,000 up to $1.4 million on the review and comment provision. In Section 7, you'll find the elimination of the requirement of a school board to publish the commissioner's review and comment of a facility project and only required to publish a summary. Section 8 talks about the leave to teach in a charter school and defines the period of time in which a district would be required to file notice with the school district. Community education director is addressed in Section 9. It increases the population threshold from 2,000 to 4,000 for districts that are eligible for an exception for the district, the director of the community education. Section 10 will talk about allowing non-resident districts the authority to first approve an enrollment application for a pupil who qualifies under the graduation incentives program who had been expelled. Section 11 is the assistive technology device, clarifying that an assistive technology device does not mean a medical device that is surgically implanted or replaced of the device, and aligns the definition for the federal IDEA definition. Also in Section 12, you're going to find state schools of Faribault, eliminating a cross-reference relating to requirements for assessment professionals there. The Safe Schools Levy relieves districts of the maintenance of effort requirement for revenue received under the Safe School Levy for the purpose of paying the costs associated with counselors, nurses, social workers, psychologists, and alcohol and chemical dependency counselors in Section 13. Section 14 explains the duties of the fire marshal. And Section 15, I see we may have a problem with Section 14, Mr. Chair. And then Section 15 is all of the different repealers that you would find in the Education Mandate Reduction Bill, which in the education portion, we were looking more for flexibility. Senator Stump's going to have some of this stuff in his education bill as well, but we were looking more for a slight relief and, of course, flexibility for districts moving forward and trying to help them find some cost savings as well.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, I was just wondering what the changes that were being made. There was mention of some language that needed to be corrected, and I'm wondering if Senator Scogin could tell us which changes were made since this came out of a committee. And also, I just wanted to mention that he mentioned a Section 15. On the amendment that we've got, Section 14 is the repealer that's coming up online here. But if we could just point out the changes, I would appreciate
it. And the A-12 amendment has 14 sections to it. Senator Scogin, the question is, how does this differ from what's in the bill that we have before us?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Fischbach, some of the stuff that came out of Rules Committee had already been taken out. Teacher prep time, for example, we had already addressed that in committee, and it got left in there by accident. So we had had a provision at one time to reduce teacher prep time by some 20%, and then that had gotten carved out, so that was no longer in the bill. Also, there was some staff development revenue, I believe, that was in there at one time that had gotten changed. We had changed the amount of fire drills that lockdowns that school districts would have to do. That got changed again, I think in this morning in taxes, some of that got changed. Those were the three that really jumped up at me when I was looking through the bill check and realized that we had had some wrong information in the Rules Committee, and so they drafted a delete all for me this morning.
Is there further discussion on the A-12 amendment?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Scogin, I don't know, maybe I didn't catch it in your presentation, but Section 14 in the amendment we have, the repealer, what are the things that are being repealed? Can you review those sections and what they pertain to?
Senator Scogin.
Mr. Chair and Senator Hand, I believe that when we look at the repealers, the 120B.11 subdivision 6 is the student evaluation. Subdivision 7 is the periodic report. In subdivision 8, the repealer there is a biennial evaluation assessment program. The 120B.39 is uniform forms for state examinations and the report to the commissioner. 122A.32 is a requirement for assessment professionals. The 122A.628 is the school mentoring schools regional sites repealer. Administrators Academy is dealt with in the 122.75 and in some of the district reports in 123B.92, Senator Hand.
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, most of the time, all of these provisions would have normally been in the Education Finance Committee bill. But with the mandate reduction bill, Many of these provisions are provisions that give districts greater flexibility. Many of these provisions were provisions that were carried dually in the Education Committee bill as well as here. But they're being the ones that have had or do not have a fiscal impact as such are the ones that have ended up here in the mandate reduction bill. And so most of these, I believe, are kind of mandates that have been brought to us by a host of different sources, a lot of them by the School Boards Association, and some by other groups too. So these, I think, are items that we can support to give our districts a little greater flexibility in operating, especially during these tough times.
Senator Coring.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would Senator Scogin yield for a question?
He will yield.
Senator Scogin, does this amendment then eliminate the requirement that all schools don't have to publish in the paper at all anymore?
Senator Scogin.
Mr. Chair, Senator Coring, no. They will not be required to publish their long reports. Sometimes you would see school districts with 3, 4, 5 pages of reports. They are required still to report a summary under those provisions, and then if public wants more information than that, the school district would have that on file at the building. But as far as the public report, it would be a summary.
Mr. Coring.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Scogin, so then the public really would, in a way, would be kind of cumbersome for them. They'd have to go to the district and get that information. It's not going to be online then? In
places where school districts would want that have online services, they are allowed to put it online as well.
Thank you.
Further discussion on the A-12 amendment. Seeing none, the question occurs on the A-12 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. The A-12 amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion on the education article. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hand.
I have the A-51 amendment.
Secretary will report the A-51 amendment.
Senator Hand moves to amend Senate File 3 as follows. Page 9, after line 6, insert. This is Amendment A-51.
On the amendment, Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And members, we had a fair amount of discussion in Education Committee this year about mandates and mandate reduction. There were a lot of recommendations brought forward. I think there were over 100 that were proposed by the School Board Association and the other education interest organizations. We did not discuss all of them, but there were a number, and there's great concern, I think, especially in today's budgetary times, economic times that we're facing. I think we all want to do the best we can to provide relief to school districts since we're not going to be able to provide them money. And so, Mr. Chairman and members, this is an amendment that is actually identical to a bill that I had introduced to the committee. It did not have an opportunity to be heard in committee. But what this does is establish a pilot program whereby a number, and we've specified in this case 3 districts, could apply to the Commissioner of Education and be granted the ability by a recorded vote of the board to eliminate any mandates that they have to comply with the exception of mandates dealing with health, safety, and testing. This would be a program that would extend for 5 years to give us a chance to determine how well this works, and so we're calling it a Liberty School District Pilot Program. And the language of the bill, the way we drafted it, was to the original bill. We've just amended that with a delete all, so the page references and the section numbers would have to be altered, and I hope that the reviser can do that and incorporate it into my amendment here. And so, members, I would urge us to adopt this, and I'd like to ask for a roll call vote.
A roll call vote has been requested. Are there 3 hands for a roll call vote? I see 3 hands. There will be a roll call vote. Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Han, maybe you didn't hear me in my opening comments, but I did say that we were limiting this bill to only items that did not have state cost or savings. And your amendment would have state costs, so this amendment would be more appropriate to be offered to the Education Omnibus Bill, not to this bill. The reason we're trying to do that, members, is so that we're not having items being conferred that have costs or savings in this bill and also in the various omnibus bills that will be out there, because to do that would just be very confusing for everyone involved.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Han.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Berglund, and I appreciate that. Although with the change in rules that we adopted that put some limitations on the ability to offer amendments to the omnibus budget bills, I'm not sure that my amendment would be germane, or whatever the right word might be, given the rules that we've adopted. And so I don't know if there is cost to this or not. There may be. I assume there's some cost with, if you ask the department to establish some guidelines to accept or to establish a pilot program, there's some administrative cost. But there would be savings, likely, to local school districts. That may result in some savings, I guess, to the state as well. But members, this is a good amendment in the spirit of what we're trying to do, which is to find ways to relieve local schools from burdensome regulation. This would require elected officials, same people that elect us at the local level, to who have been given the charge to manage school districts, to decide what mandates they need to relieve themselves of. And it would do it for a fixed period of time so that the rest of the state and the legislature could examine how effective this approach is. So again, members, I'd urge you to vote yes for this.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and members, I was hoping that the senator just didn't quite understand the rules for this bill today. But since he doesn't feel he'll be clever enough to figure out how to pay for this when the education bill comes up, I would urge you to vote against this amendment today. We cannot be adding costs to this bill, and that is what this amendment would do.
So further discussion on the A51 amendment? Seeing none, a roll call vote has been requested. The secretary will take the roll on the A51 amendment. Have all senators voted who desire to vote? The secretary will close the roll. There being 19 ayes and 43 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Is there further discussion on the education article? Senator Rosen.
Mr. Chair, I have the A52 amendment, please.
Secretary will report the A52 amendment.
Senator Rosen moves to amend Senate file number 3 as follows. Page 9 after line 6, insert. This is amendment A52.
On the amendment, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment, the A52 amendment, basically, again, would provide some flexibility to the school districts, something that my superintendents, the dozen superintendents that I have, are asking for, are begging for. And I believe, Senator Berglund, there would be no fiscal cost to this. It would, for a temporary suspension, for a two-year suspension, relieve the requirements on the reserved revenue for staff development. Section 20, it would, a temporary suspension for 2 years on the contract settlement deadline and penalty. A temporary suspension on the learning and development revenue for class size reduction. And
Section 22, a temporary suspension for 2 years for the Safe Schools levy funds. And again, members, we're just trying to provide flexibility, and I just believe that the school districts, let them manage their schools, and this would provide that opportunity for them. And, Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call, please.
A roll call vote has been requested. There are three hands for a roll call vote. Seeing three hands, there will be a roll call vote. Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Rosen, just to your amendment, as much as we would like to not make this any more cumbersome than possible, I will point out that Section 19, Section 21, and Section 22, I believe, are going to be in our Senate File 1328, the omnibus education bill that Senator Stumpf will be presenting later in the week, I believe. The only provision that you won't see in his bill is in Section 20 when we talk about contract settlement deadlines and penalties.
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Three out of the four provisions are in the Education Finance Committee bill, which you'll see tomorrow morning. The one that's not in there is Section 20, which is the January 15th deadline change. And oddly enough, if we adopt that, we have to carry a cost. And the reason is, and we can talk about it more tomorrow, but is that without the January 15th deadline, there is an additional cost to the state of Minnesota. And I don't have the exact cost with me because I was thinking that we were going to talk about the fiscal stuff tomorrow morning rather than this morning. But the other three provisions are in the finance bill, so we have already have those covered.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then I would like to pull my A52 amendment, and Senator Stumpf and Senator Scogin, I'll be happy to talk about that cost tomorrow, but I do believe that these mandates should be relieved.
The A52 amendment is withdrawn. For further discussion on the education article. So further discussion on the education article. Seeing none, Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, then I'd like to yield to Senator Lynch to discuss Articles 2 through 4, that is Human Services, Health Care, and Public Safety.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In Article 2, before I get started on Article 2, let me just say that, as Senator Berglund mentioned, there's been a lot of work behind the scenes in bringing forward the information you see today, and particularly in Articles 2 and Article 3, I'd like to acknowledge and give thanks to Senator Rosen, Senator Lurie, and Senator Sharon for their assistance on the work group that went through and worked on all of these and many other provisions. And very briefly, in Section 1, these small programs are licensed by the Department of Human Services. This language requires exempted programs to contract with or employ a certified food manager to oversee their food preparation procedures. Section 2 adds flexibility to the service and allows providers to respond more directly and appropriately to client needs in the area of children's therapeutic services and supports. Section 3 deals with level of care determination for children admitted to treatment foster care settings. Section 4 allows for cremation in lieu of burial shouldn't be an option as long as it's mindful and respectful of cultural and religious preferences. Section 5, this is duplicate of the certification the state provides, and so this is eliminating an additional requirement for local certification. Section 6 and 7 clarify provisions related to CTSS functional assessment. Section 8 removes the requirement to maintain a base level of funding for family service collaboratives. Section 9 modifies the definition of a child's caseworker. And Section 10 is a federal conformity issue with regard to relative foster parents. I'll move on, Mr. Chair, to Article 3. This is the health care section. Section 1 requires the Commissioner of Health to accept an independent audit on a health plan company by a nationally recognized independent organization if the audit procedures are comparable. Section 2 revises the schedule for checking incontinent nursing home residents. Residents must be treated according to the resident's comprehensive assessment and care plans. Section 3 is along the same lines, establishes the same protocol for repositioning residents. Section 4 defines medication reminders. Section 5 affords additional flexibility to the supervision of Class B home care aides. Section 6 allows nursing assistants who are registered to perform health aid tasks. Section 7 deems compliance with other license requirements to day training and rehabilitation service providers under certain conditions. Section 8 is designed to afford some additional flexibility to school districts with regard to information that they communicate with regard to healthcare information to students and families. Section 9 is technical in nature to clarify current practice. And, Mr. Chair, that concludes the healthcare article. I'll move on to Article 4.
Well, why don't we pause here to see, is there any discussion or questions on Articles 2 or 3? Any questions about Articles 2 or 3? Seeing none, Article 4.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Article 4 is public safety section. There were a number of things that came to our work group that upon further discussion we realized did not fall under our original jurisdiction of Health and Human Services. And so those are the items that appear in Article 4. To begin with, Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the A5 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A5 amendment.
Senator Lynch moves to amend Senate File 3 as follows. Page 28, delete Section 1. Page 30, this is Amendment A-5.
On the amendment, Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, this amendment is the result of some good work that actually transpired in the Judiciary Committee, and it was with discussions with Senator Limmer, Senator Foley, and Senator Moore that we felt the need to further refine some work that we were doing in the area of pre-sentence investigation. And this allows for the continued practice of pre-sentence investigation, but it is our feeling that this will provide greater impartiality in those pre-sentence investigations and some additional flexibility.
Is there discussion on the A5 amendment? Seeing none, the question occurs on the A5 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The A5 amendment is adopted. Senator Lynch.
Mr. Chair, and then finally in the Article 4, Section 1, again, provides some flexibility to school districts. This is with regard to giving copies of court dispositions to superintendents and allowing for that to happen via mail or email. And with that, Mr. Chair, that concludes the contents of Articles 2, 3, and 4.
Is there any further discussion on Articles 2, 3, and 4? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. President, I have the A-19 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A-19 amendment.
Senator Ingebrigtsen moves to amend Senate File 3 as follows. Page 29, after line 34, insert. This is Amendment A-19.
On the amendment, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. What this is what's referred to by the counties as another unfunded mandate that wasn't actually occurred in 2003, but it's the short-term offender. I think you've all heard about it. if you've been paying attention to the county's request this year of dealing with mandates, that was one of their priorities, I believe, what it does, basically, in 2003, the state of Minnesota started sending prisoners back to the counties for the last 180 days of their sentence when they were mandated the custody of the state. Counties then also received just a small amount of money, anywhere from, and I can stand corrected on the exact amount, but anywhere from $7 to $9 per day for the per diems that were actually costing the counties, anywhere ranging from $55 to $65 a day is what they would charge other counties if they were to contract with them. So it turned out costing an awful lot for the counties. That did actually go away, the best portion of that in 2007 when we had surplus dollars. If you remember, the state actually started sending $30 a day per diem back to the counties for short-term offenders. What this bill does, this amendment does, is take away the short-term offender for good. Actually, the state of Minnesota would then house the prisoner for the last 180 days of the sentence as it did prior to 2003. It's going to save the counties, and all your counties, Mr. President and members, are going to save some dollars here. It's going to be about $9 million for the biennium. So they're basically going to take back the responsibility that the state had up until that time. And again, that's going to that was one of the most, egregious, but it'll certainly one of the loudest unfunded mandates that I've been hearing from the coming from the county's representatives. So I certainly urge your support on this. The counties are looking at this, and it's a significant in money, and I think there's dollars there available for that included in the tails. So I ask your support on this.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and members, this is a big cost to the state, this particular amendment. And so this amendment should be offered, if you care to do so, Senator, to the public safety budget bill, not to this bill. This would have a huge fiscal impact on our state corrections budget. So I would urge a no vote. This is not an appropriate amendment for this bill.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, I certainly respect those comments. However, we are certainly talking about the Article 4 Public Safety Division, so I guess it would fit there. So I urge the members to really consider this. And, Mr. President, I would ask for a roll call vote on this. Thank you.
A roll call vote has been requested. Are there three hands for a roll call vote? Seeing three hands, there will be a roll call vote. Is there further discussion on the A-19 amendment? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on the A-19 amendment. Have all senators voted who desire to vote? The Secretary will close the rolls. There being 25 ayes and 36 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendments are not adopted. Is there further discussion on Articles 2, 3, and 4? Further discussion? Senator Berglund?
Mr. Chairman, then I'd like to yield to Senator Rest to talk about the local government provisions in the bill.
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The local government provisions, first of all, in Section 1, allows local units of government to submit group applications to the state auditor for waivers from rules rather than having to do it individually. Section 2, which I will have a clarifying amendment to, provides for delayed implementation of agency rules when the proposed rule would require an adoption or an amendment to an ordinance. Section 3 allows deputy registrars to take credit cards. Section 4 has to do with elections and allows the administrative law judges to proportion out the costs of an election complaint that comes to them, which we had taken care of, I think, last year or so. Section 5 deals with counties that have accepted responsibility for abandoned cemeteries so that they don't have to have further burials. That also would be the same thing for Section 8 for townships. Section 6 allows for an increase from $5,000 to $10,000 as the amount of construction and development-related fees that needs to be included in a report to Dolly, so it's just raising that level. Section 7 refers to paying for fence viewers. Section 9 through 11 I'm going to propose be eliminated or deleted. It has to deal with agreements between the county and its workers to go to a four-day work week, and both the counties and the workers' representatives decided that that wasn't really going to be a feasible thing, and so they asked that it be come out of the bill at this point. Section 12 raises the limit from $300 to $2,000 as the amount for which individualized itemized counts need not be published by the county board. Section 13 deals with the appeals process for county clerks. Sections 14 through 18 removes the minimum salary provisions. They're really out of date and not necessary, and that relates to the county auditor, treasurer, recorder, and sheriff. Sections 19 and 20 updates threshold amounts for contracts and day labor. Section 21 is the same provision except for HRAs. Section 22 made some changes in the pay equity reporting. We're going to delete that as well. Section, or my amendment will propose to do that. Section 23 adds Dakota and Anoka counties to the metro counties that don't have to prepare a land use plan for unincorporated territory within the county because those counties don't do so. So they don't have that requirement. Section 24 will also be proposed to be deleted by amendment, and it provided a moratorium on the adoption of rules. Originally, the bill had rules with regard to the EQB and shoreland management rules and the Department of Corrections. We proposed to take out the one that was left in the bill, and that was the Department of Corrections. And then Section 25 asked the Records Retention Task Force to come up with some ideas on how long records need to be retained. Right now, it goes from a couple of years to in perpetuity, and we think that maybe that we could use some advice in changing that. Mr. Chairman, I have the A15 amendment, and I would like to add an oral amendment.
On the A15 amendment, what change would you like to make for the rest?
Let's see what I make. Mr. Chairman, on line 17 of the amendment, I would like to add section 9 so that it would read page 35, delete sections 10, 9, 10, and 11. And then page 43, delete section 22. So it's just adding a deletion of two more sections, section 9 and section 22. And I've already explained it as I went through the bill.
The Secretary will report the modifications to the A-15 amendment.
Senator Ress moves to amend Senate File 3 as follows, page 32 after line 13, insert. This is Amendment A-15 with the following changes. On line 7, should read delete sections 9, 10, and 11. And then we'll insert another line, page 43, delete section 22. Those are in addition to the rest of the A-15.
Is there discussion on the A-15 amendment as modified? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like Senator Ress to give an explanation of why she's eliminating section 22. We did have a discussion about it in committee, and we've done this in the past. In 2003, we did it, and I think there were not any dire consequences, and it is some mandate relief for the political subdivisions.
Senator Rest on section 22.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Roebling, you are absolutely correct, and that was a compromise position that I supported. But I have heard from a lot of groups that are affected by the pay equity law since then, and I became convinced that it is not an undue burden. So that's why I'm proposing to leave it, let it go from the bill.
Sarah Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Roebling, also one of the things that's changed since the earlier days is that local units of government can now ask the department to give them a different reporting period. And so if they feel it would be helpful to them, they can do that. The department will look at their record to see whether or not that should be granted.
So further discussion on the A-15 amendment as modified. Seeing none, the question occurs on the A-15 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. The A-15 amendment is adopted. Is there further discussion on Article 5? Senator Roebling.
I have the A-53 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A-53 amendment.
Senator Roebling moves to amend Senate File 3 as follows, page 43 after line 28, insert. This is Amendment A-53.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have an amendment, and I think that it deals with a repealer that's in the bill that eliminates the requirement for the out-of-state travel policy for local units of government. And it was my understanding then that when it was in committee, we decided that the policies should probably stay in place, but that they no longer had to be reviewed annually. And so my amendment takes away the annual review, but leaves the policies in place with the local units of government and available for public inspection, and also requires them that if they want to change the policies, that it would have to be by a recorded vote of the body. All of the units of government should have a policy in place currently because the former law said they had to have it by January 1st, 2006. And I am just asking that they keep that on record, that they would have to have a vote if they're changing their policy, and that it would be available for the public to see. So it's no extra work because it's already there, supposedly. But I think it's a good idea to have it, and we don't have to have them looking at it every year, only if there's a need for a change, and then they would look at it as a full body and take a recorded vote on it.
Senator Rust.
Mr. Chairman, I don't really think that Senator Roebling's amendment is needed, but I actually don't have any problem with it, and I would accept it.
So further discussion on the A-53 amendment. Seeing none, the question occurs on the A-53 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The A-53 amendment is adopted. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have the A-8 amendment.
Secretary will report the A-8 amendment.
Senator Anderson moves to amend Senate File 3 as follows, page 38 after line 16, insert. This is Amendment A-8.
On the amendment, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is language that passed through the Judiciary Committee and has been worked out with all stakeholders that provides just a little bit more flexibility for sheriff's departments around the state and allows them to hire as a deputy sheriff someone who is practicing law. And it just makes that correction. It's a really old law that prohibited that. And as I mentioned, I took this through the Judiciary Committee, and the language has been worked out with the Sheriff's Association and the Bar Association. I don't believe there's any opposition to it.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rust.
I support the amendment.
Is there further discussion on the A8 amendment? Seeing none, the question occurs on the A8 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The A8 amendment is adopted. Is there further discussion on Article 5? Further discussion on Article 5. Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, then I'd like to yield to Senator Bach to take up the last article in the bill.
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Senator Berglund. And Mr. Chairman, I have the A9 amendment I'd like to offer.
The Secretary will report the A9 amendment.
Senator Bach moves to amend Senate File 3 as follows. Page 46, after line 5, insert Section 2. This is Amendment A-9.
On the amendment, Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, what the A9 amendment makes two changes in the tax article. It proposes to delete the levy limit portion of the bill, and the reason for that is we found out after we passed the provision over to rules that the Department of Revenue scored the levy limit provision as about a $5 million cost. The Department of Revenue's position is that if the levy limits come off, there are going to be increased property taxes, consequently leading to an increase in the amount of money spent on the property tax refund program of about $5 million a year. The second thing that the amendment does is it makes it very clear that when local units of government adopt their preliminary budget and levies, that they must, because we're repealing the truth in taxation requirements in the article, it makes it clear that they have to communicate to the public the time and place of subsequent meetings when the public will have an opportunity to come and address the budget, address the levy, and specifically says the public needs to have an opportunity to speak at the subsequent meetings where the budget is considered by the local unit of government. So that's the extent of the amendment. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your support.
Is there discussion on the A9 amendment? Senator Vandeveer.
Mr. President, will Senator Bach yield for a question?
He will yield.
Senator Bach, what are you changing in truth in taxation?
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Vandeveer, the article of the bill, not the amendment, the article of the bill will remove the requirement for a separate standalone truth in taxation meeting. What the amendment does, it just makes it clear that with that repeal, there becomes a special order of business that the public is notified about, where the public has an opportunity to come and address the budget issues, address the levy, and has an opportunity for public comment. The amendment just makes it clear that at a regularly scheduled meeting where the budget is being discussed, there's an opportunity for the public to participate, requires that notice to be in the minutes that are published. Also requires that provision to be included in the mail notice that individuals will get relative to what the potential levy impact is on their parcel of property.
Senator Vandeveer.
So, Mr. President, Senator or Chairman, Senator Bach, the truth in taxation notices will go out. It's a meeting requirement that's eliminated, if I understand that. And then,
Senator Vandeveer, there. The individual taxpayer will still get a mail notice, but what the notice will not say is it will not indicate a special called meeting for truth and taxation purposes. It's just going to indicate when the regularly scheduled meeting is, where the budget is going to be considered, and it will also provide for time for the public to testify.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, one more question. What, you said something about levy limits, that you were doing something with those?
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Vandeveer, what the amendment does is goes back to current law and leaves the 3.9% limit that's in current law in place. So there really is no impact on levy limits. Once the amendment goes on, there's no impact on current law relative to levy limits in the tax article any longer.
Is there discussion on the A9 amendment? Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A10 amendment.
Does it amend the A9 amendment?
I'm sorry.
We're on the A9 amendment.
I'm sorry.
Okay, so we'll act on the A9 amendment, then we'll recognize you, Senator Senjum. Is there further discussion on the A9 amendment? Seeing none, the question occurs on the A9 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. The A9 amendment is adopted. Senator Senjum?
Mr. Chairman?
Oh, Senator Bach.
Would you like me to go through the tax article before we take amendments?
Yeah, Senator Bach, that would be helpful, and then we'll recognize Senator Senjum after you do that.
Mr. Chairman and members, the tax article repeals the requirement of a standalone separate truth and taxation meeting, and I think Senator Vandeveer flushed that out pretty clearly what the requirement will be, that under the new amended language at the regularly scheduled meeting where the budget is going to be considered, the public will be given an opportunity to testify on the budget and their levy impacts at a regularly called meeting rather than a special called meeting. It also has a two-year suspension of the requirement to publish the notice that the budget is going to be considered. That was a provision that required a special publication of the time and date of the Truth and Taxation meeting. And so we're getting rid of the Truth and Taxation meeting. We're getting rid of that notice that talks about the special called Truth and Taxation meeting also. Now, individual taxpayers are still going to receive a mailing, even though they won't read it in the newspaper. They'll still receive a mailing about their potential impact on their property taxes because of the new budget. Another piece, under current law, when the county publishes a property tax delinquency list, if they make any error in that list, they have to publish the entire property tax delinquency list over again. What the language in the bill does is says, and this was, I believe, a Senator Marty provision, says that if there's an error in the publication of the delinquent property list, that the only thing that has to be published or republished is the actual error that occurred in the publishing of the earlier delinquency list. The one other piece, under current law, if a person's property tax liability is $50 or less, counties can require that to be paid in one installment on May 15th. This county's indicated that they could save some significant money by increasing that threshold above $50. So what the bill does is it says if your property tax payment for the calendar year is $250 or less, that you have to make that payment at one time at the May 15th payment date rather than have two payments of in May and October. So, Mr. Chairman, that concludes my description of the tax article.
Senator Senjum?
Thank you, Mr. President. And I have the A-10 amendment.
Secretary will report the A-10 amendment.
Senator Senjum moves to amend Senate File 3 as follows. Page 45, delete Section 1. Page 46, this is Amendment A-10.
On the amendment, Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, I may need to progress this amendment for a couple of minutes. I just received another that is is a, I think, a redress of my 810, but I need to clarify that.
Well, you can withdraw the amendment if you want to reoffer this or an alternative amendment later.
Mr. President, I would withdraw the 810.
The 810 amendment is withdrawn. Is there further discussion on the tax article, Article 6? Yep. Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, I would offer the A11 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A11 amendment.
Senator Senjum moves to amend the Bach Amendment to Senate File 3 adopted by the Senate April 6 as follows. Page 1, delete lines 2 to 36 and insert. This is Amendment A11.
On the amendment, Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, the A11 amendment is actually pretty simple. It just works to reinstate the truth and taxation hearings as we know them, and the public notice that goes ahead goes in advance of those hearings. And Mr. President, members, I know that we're all trying to understand and to, in fact, move forward with some level of reforms to save money, but I guess on this one I would ask why this one. Why do we actually further want to remove our citizens from our government? Why do we want to tell our citizens in a certain fashion that what they think doesn't matter? I think that's not the kind of road that we want to go down. I think we're at a time in history when we need our people, in fact, to be more involved in their government and pay a little bit more attention to it. And I think truth and taxation is one of those times. It's that precious moment every year. And Mr. President, I served on a city council for 11 years. It was that moment when we invited our citizens in to let them know and to let them, in fact, comment on the budget of our particular unit of government. I think that's an important feature of government, and I think that we ought not get rid of that. So, Mr. President and members, this is about maintaining as we have it a truth and taxation hearing schedule, a truth and taxation hearing program, and the advance notice of that that goes to all the citizens within a community, telling them about the hearing, what's going to happen, where it's going to be, and what their opportunities are to come. And I think it's a precious piece of citizenship. It's a precious piece of civic involvement that we shouldn't get rid of. I'd urge support for this vote. With a roll call, please.
First of all, the amendment is not yet on the system because it just has recently come up, so we'll have to wait a minute or two for it's there. Roll call has been requested. Are there three hands for a roll call? Seeing three hands, there will be a roll call vote. Senator Bach.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Senjum, some of the counties indicated they were still going to do truth and taxation meetings, and I think a lot of local units of government probably will continue to do a standalone truth and taxation meeting. This doesn't prevent them from doing that. It just relieves them from the state mandate that they have to hold a special called meeting on a special date at a special place and time. The law will read, if this were to pass into law, that really it's a substitute for the standalone truth and taxation meeting. The notice will say that it will indicate the time and place of the meeting where the budget's going to be considered. There will be a time for the public to testify. Specifically says that in the language, the amended language that's in the bill. Members, I don't think this is a huge request to help accommodate our local units of government. There are hundreds and hundreds of special called meetings every year that have a real cost to them. Not only all the publication requirements, but the staff time and holding these meetings in the evening add a tremendous additional burden on local units of government. And if local units of government want to continue to hold those special called meetings, they certainly can if they want to. But this, all this language really does is tell them you can discuss your budget and your property tax impacts and provide an opportunity for the public to testify at a regularly scheduled meeting as a special order of business. Senator Senjum, I just don't think your amendment is necessary. I think the language in the bill will continue to allow the taxpayer to be adequately informed, give their opportunity to come and participate in the process. So, members, I would appreciate a no vote on the Sendrum amendment.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. In the case of the Carver County Board and most county boards in the state, that would be 9 a.m. on Tuesday morning. And I don't know where you are at 9 o'clock on Tuesday mornings, but most of the world is at work. The kids are at school. Everybody has obligations. And so that's why we have them at a separately noticed meeting so that folks can attend. And the fact that it is special, meaning it's designated as one particular evening, is also very important, because to weigh in on county board business and perhaps even city council business, you have to be at the right meeting. Oftentimes, items get placed on an agenda on several different occasions. And so it's hard to know for an ordinary layperson when they should appear before the county board. And if they miss the first 5 minutes, maybe they've missed the opportunity to comment. It gets very confusing. And so I think it is incumbent upon us. It is our responsibility as members of the government to make sure that it is always accessible and never not accessible, never confusing, and make sure there's always time for public participation. It's a high duty that we have, and it's one that I think is easily fulfilled here by all of us. It's the duty we owe, and I hope members will support the Senator Sendrum amendment.
Further discussion on the A11 amendment is not yet on the computer. Senator Sendrum.
Mr. President, members, and again, I would just maybe reiterate just a little bit. Truth in taxation, to me, is again one of those very precious and very important moments within a local government total job, where they do invite citizens in, ask them specifically, take a look at what we've done with respect to your budget for this year, and tell us what you think. And I think that is so precious, that is so important to our democracy, to our society, to in fact the way government in fact works within our citizenry. I have great fears that taking that out of our culture, if you will, is certainly not going to advance government and our society further to the better. I think leaving this in, keeping our truth in taxation process as it is a very, very important element of our society. And please, members, let's vote for this amendment. Let's keep our truth and taxation process alive and moving forward as it ought to be in a state and a country like ourselves that needs citizen involvement now, in fact, more than ever.
Members, although the amendment is not yet online, basically what it does is it just amends the Bach Amendment to delete parts of the Bach Amendment and then would delete parts of the article that you have before you. So there's really no language to read. It's just deleting parts of the amendment. So I suspect that the discussion we've had describes what the intent is, although looking at the amendment, you would not be able to see it. Is there further discussion on the A11 amendment? There was a roll call requested, so the secretary will take the roll on the A11 amendment. Have all senators voted who desire to vote? The secretary will close the roll. There being 23 ayes and 40 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Senator Sharon, I can't hear you. Oh, well.
Thank you. I was certain I'd punch my button. I saw that there wasn't a vote allocated there because I would like to have my vote included.
Well, that's why I try to slow down and try to see, but you got to get my attention before we announce it. Once I've announced it, I can't back up. So further discussion on the on Article 6. The further discussion on Article 6. Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and members, then I would ask today that you honor the work of many committees and many senators who have worked hard to try to find ways to provide relief to our local units of government and to some of our health care providers. Thank you.
Senator Berglund renews her motion when this committee do arise that Senate File Number 3 be reckoned and passed. Discussion on the motion. Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, Senator Berglund, if she would yield.
She will yield.
Senator Berglund, is there any estimated amount of savings that this mandate bill will bring to local government at this point? I know it's just put together last Friday. It's hard to compute, but any ideas?
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Senjum, I don't believe that, at least I haven't seen any quantifiable amount, but there are considerable amount of savings in here. Of course, it will vary depending on what your situation is in your local community, but there are considerable savings here for local units of government. I know in my county alone, just the burial provision is a substantial amount of savings.
Further discussion. On the motion by Senator Berglund that when this committee do arise, Senate File Number 3 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. The next item on general orders is number 58 on general orders, Senate File 1486. Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1486 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, in 2007, we passed the Electronic Recycling Act. Most of us call it the e-waste bill. And it established an obligation for manufacturers of video display devices, televisions, laptops, monitors, those kinds of things, to collect and recycle 60% by weight of the products sold in Minnesota. The first year's results have come back, and we have collected in the first year 42 million pounds of electronic waste. That's about twice of what we expected. And so we're sort of victims of our own success at this point. So this bill does a couple of tweaks to the bill to get us to the end of the first biennium reporting period. What we found was that our counties have been getting letters from the electronic manufacturers saying that they have no reason to continue collecting the recycling because they have built up enough credits that they don't have to collect anything more. And clearly that's not what we wanted, and so pretty much we have like two tweaks that'll help us in this and get us down the road. One of the changes is to cap the amount that can be held over from year to year. The original bill had no restrictions, and we are now capping it at 25% that can be held over from year to year. We also revised the way that the manufacturers calculate their obligation to recycle, and we're going to change it so that everybody uses the same formula using national sales data. That will make it much easier for them to report the data as well. That's it. I ask for your vote.
Is there discussion on Senate File 1486? Seeing none, Senator Higgins renews her motion when this committee do arise, Senate File 1486 be recommended to pass. on that motion. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The next item on general orders is number 58, Senate file, or number 46. Number 46, Senate file 468, Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, members, this Senate file.
You need to move
that. I move that when the committee do arise, that Senate file 462 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman and members, currently in Minnesota law, there is a pilot program for two counties which provides for an ignition interlock system that would allow those persons whose driving privileges are revoked because of a DWI to be able to drive again earlier than they otherwise would, only if they have in their vehicles an electronic device that would prevent the vehicle from starting unless they provided a breath sample for that device, which showed that the driver did not have any alcohol in their body. The reason for this is actually to increase public safety. The fact of the matter is that many people whose licenses are revoked because of a DWI drive anyway because they feel they need to get to work to keep their job, to pay for the rent or the house, to put food on the table for their families. And when they drive revoked, the studies show they are a greater threat to public safety. Often they are also then driving without insurance. The idea behind the ignition interlock program, which has been in effect in Minnesota now for 2 years in two counties, Hennepin and Beltrami County, is that if they get valid driving privileges under this program, when they drive, they are more likely to be driving safely. And with this ignition interlock, we will also be virtually assured that they are driving without any alcohol in their system. The program has proven somewhat successful in the counties, and I say somewhat because its reach has not quite gotten to as many drivers as we would like to see. And the Department of Public Safety is working with Mothers Against Drunk Driving and other organizations to try to determine criteria for the program that would increase the number of potential drivers that would qualify for this program. Other states have had this in effect with a great amount of success. They have seen the repeat drunk driving reduced as a result of this, and they've seen a reduction in the number of other violations as well. Mothers Against Drunk Driving does support this, and you will see on your desk a letter to that effect, as well as some other information supports the advent of ignition interlock from the experience, particularly in New Mexico. You can see the chart that's on your desk and the graphs that are on the back of that page showing ignition interlock installations increasing and drunk driving reducing as a correlation. I do have one technical amendment that I would like to offer, which is the A2 amendment. It was a drafting oversight during the initial bill, and Senate counsel suggested that we need to extend the expiration date for a corollary provision relating to judicially mandated sentences.
The Secretary will report the A2 amendment.
Senator Latz moves to amend Senate File 462 as follows. Page 1 after line 5, insert. This is Amendment A-2.
On the amendment, Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman and members, this amendment would extend the expiration date for a subdivision by 2 years to correspond with the expiration date for the underlying bill itself. What the underlying bill itself does is it extends the pilot program by 2 years and expands the pilot program statewide so that every county in Minnesota will have the availability of the ignition interlock program.
Is there discussion on the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The A2 amendment is adopted. Senator Latz. Further discussion on Senate File 462. Seeing none, Senator Latch renews his motion. When this committee do arise, Senate File 462 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The last item on general orders is number 59, Senate File 489. Senator Clark.
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File number 489 be recommended to pass.
On the motion, Senator Clark.
Members, this is the Reverse Mortgaging Reform Act that we've been working on with AARP, Lutheran Social Services, and the Attorney General's Office. As you may be aware, reverse mortgages are sold and marketed to senior citizens, usually age 62 and above. Under a reverse mortgage, the company pays the senior a lump sum or periodic payments using the equity in the senior's home. Usually, the senior does not need to repay the loan until he or she moves or dies. Reverse mortgages are suitable for some people based on their financial circumstances. We are trying to get ahead of the curve here, just like with the predatory lending laws that the legislature passed in the last couple years. We're trying to prevent this from becoming the next subprime type of a situation because they're not suitable for all seniors and they may be an expensive way of financing. Some troublesome aspects of reverse mortgage marketing tactics have included marketing reverse mortgage to a senior that bears higher fees and cost and is less suitable than other financing options, using easy credit marketing tactics similar to those that led to the mortgage meltdown by encouraging a senior to take out an expensive reverse mortgage to finance a lifestyle they otherwise would be unable to afford while ignoring risky aspects of those products. Using high-pressure cross-selling where the seller or the affiliate encourages a senior to take out a reverse mortgage only to put the proceeds in a long-term care insurance policy or a long-term deferred annuity where the cost of the mortgage outweighs any investment gains on the new investment. The FBI has seen a spike in reverse mortgage fraud, both with regard to excessive fees and abusive marketing practices. Although some government-guaranteed reverse mortgages are regulated and insured by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, many are not, leaving seniors without protections and standards afforded in the federal law. I'm offering this bill because the legislature should be proactive to make sure disastrous experiences with subprime and predatory lending is not repeated with reverse mortgages. Having worked with many seniors, I can tell you from firsthand these are confusing items, and we want to make sure we make sure that they have good information. So to prevent the next crisis, this particular bill requires lenders to determine a given reverse mortgage is suitable for the senior before selling it to them. It limits insurance producers from cross-selling annuities, life insurance, or long-term care products to a senior using the proceeds of a reverse mortgage. The Minnesota Insurance and Financial Service Council supports this effort to prevent proceeds from being used. One of the reasons AARP supports it is the rescission period. We have gone down from a 30-day rescission period to a 10-day rescission period in which the senior may rescind the mortgage. It also aligns Minnesota law with federal reverse mortgage lending requirements, and we have counseling requirements in it. And members, I do have one amendment. We've amended this in committees, but I have the A4 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A4 amendment.
Senator Clark moves to amend Senate File 489 as follows, page 6, line 12. This is Amendment A-4.
On the amendment, Senator Clark.
Members, one of the important aspects of this is a suitability clause. Essentially, it's almost kind of the would you think this was a good idea for your grandmother clause. Before a person would go to get counseling on this and really make that determination, before they would start getting a lot of costs associated with appraisals, etc., the entity should be making sure that at least in some limited way that this really is suitable. Now, the suitability clause that is in the bill right now is very similar to what is done with life insurance. But in working with Senator Vandiver and Sarah Scheib, we're trying to figure out how to perhaps put a little bit
make it a little bit narrower. So what this does is it just modifies the provisions that are in there so that the lender would be looking at the circumstances, including the income, age, assets, as well as the benefits and cost of a reverse mortgage when compared to the benefits and costs of other options available to the borrower. So it tailors it a little bit more than what the original bill does, and hopefully that will provide some clarity.
Is a discussion on the A4 amendment? Seeing none, the question occurs on the A4 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The A4 amendment is adopted. Senator Clark.
And that would be it from me. I renew my motion.
Is there further discussion on Senate File 489? Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Clark renews her motion when this. Oh, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Clark, in looking over your bill, what is the notice period now? I'm trying to regain, or I'm trying to remind, or I'm trying to remember what the notice is. Is this the bill that has the extended notice after the closing on a mortgage such as this?
Senator Clark.
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, this, again, the rescission period in the bill originally was at 30 days. We compromised to 10 days because it really is believed that seniors need a chance to get a chance to talk with their children, among others. Right now, in reverse mortgages, aside from the federally insured, there is no days. And again, I can tell you that's an issue. The federally insured are only 3 days. And AARP and others feel very strongly that it's important to have a chance afterwards to have their children get a chance to be talked to. There are some entities that either sell or could be selling these that may do a really good job, and the person who would be entering into a reverse mortgage may know all along what is going on. But there are many situations where that's not the case, where somebody may only get the papers and see them for the first time when a notary shows up. So we think it's very important that we do that. Now, this is similar to what is done with insurance products. And because this is a similar type of a product, we believe that this makes sense. My understanding is in the insurance products that while the law is at 10 days, that usually it really is about 20 days that people are allowed to go ahead and make a similar rescission.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Clark, this loan process, though, is a little different. You have a program that the person seeking this mortgage has to undergo. They have to educate themselves. They elsewhere in your bill, up toward the first section, not in definitions, but the following one, counseling requirements, preparing to accepting a final and complete application, a lender must, and goes through a number of requirements, receive a certification from the applicant that they've received counseling. You're really kind of going above and beyond the norm in having the applicant for the loan go through counseling, and yet at the same time, even to be doubly or triply sure, now you're asking the lender not to file. They have to not file the mortgage for 10 days after the closing, giving the applicant even further opportunity to review paperwork that, quite honestly, they've kind of gone through a counseling school to determine what it's all about. And then they've had time to study, and then they have the time for the closing to take place. And I'm just wondering, I can see where there could be a lot of problems on behalf of filing liens and waiting 10 days where a lien could assert itself as a first lien ahead of the mortgage, which is highly unusual. A mortgage company would never even offer a mortgage on a property if they didn't get first place, unless it was a second mortgage, of course, and that's a different rule process. So I'm very concerned about the 10-day notice for filing purposes and making sure that the lien is in its proper order.
Senator Clark.
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, again, we are trying to be proactive here. This is not unlike what the federal requirements currently are. Currently, there are 3 days. There's a 3-day rescission period, and yes, a lien could be filed during that period of time. But remember, we're often talking about vulnerable seniors. I don't watch a whole lot of daytime TV, but from what I hear from others, the airwaves are just full of, you too can get lots of money right now out of your house. There are people who are believing that this is a good way for them to be essentially making a buck. And we are trying to make sure that people know what they're getting themselves into and that they have an opportunity to get out of it. So what I believe is that we will have, again, kind of the, is this a good idea for my grandma on the suitability test? Then I, as a person, may go and get the counseling. Independent has nothing to do with the entity selling this to me while they're doing the appraisal and those other things. I may never see a piece of paper during all this time. The counselor is not looking over the contract. They're not helping me figure out if the contract is a good one. What it means, though, is at the end of the day, when I sign that contract, I have a little bit more time than what the federal one does. And we heard these same arguments about predatory lending laws. And we've gone from 30 days, which I personally believed was a little bit too long, down to 10 days. That's essentially a week and a half. This is a very reasonable provision.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Clark, I was imagining what my grandparents would do if I put my nose in their personal business, and I probably would have been thrown off the front stoop. That's just the people that they were. And yet, at the same time, there are vulnerable seniors, but I wouldn't go quite as far as putting them all in the same category and saying that and treating all senior citizens as vulnerable. I can understand the 3-day limitation that may be short-lived on behalf of a reverse mortgage. It is a different type of animal. The 10 days I still think would provide an opportunity for mischief or for someone to jump ahead of the lien. I think that's very critical. Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer a one-word amendment on page 5, line 29, change the word 10 regarding the 10 days notice period to 5 as a compromise that would recognize the opportunity to have a little bit more of an extension and beyond the three days. And let's see. I think there's another reference on page 5, line 22. The 10 has to be changed to 5 as well.
The Secretary will report the oral amendment.
Senator Limmer moves to amend Senate File 489 as follows. On page 5, line 22, delete 10 and insert 5. And also on line 29, delete 10 and insert 5.
And that is your proposal. Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Is there?
Mr. Chairman, that is appropriately described as the amendment. The reason I bring this up, members, is that I'm now 30 years in the real estate sales business. I was a loan officer for 4 years, and having during that same time been a real estate broker and owned my own business, I understand what Senator Clark is attempting to do. I think we need to have a little bit more of a compromise to recognize both sides of the transaction. I know that I have seen the mischief that can occur if one delays too long in filing a mortgage as a first lien. Other things can come before it, and that may even disqualify the mortgage from ever occurring, and then the consumer who desperately needs a little bit of a cash flow as a result of a reverse mortgage would be out. So I'm just trying to recognize the reality in the market and hope that that would be seen as a friendly amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer, apparently on page 5, line 19, that would also have to be changed from 10 to 5 as well, too. I'll have the Secretary report that as well.
Also on the Limmer oral amendment, on page 5, line 19, delete 10 and insert 5. So it's on lines 19, 22, and 29, delete 10 and insert 5.
Senator Clark.
Members, I oppose this amendment. We actually spent a lot of time in two different committees on this. And again, the original thought was 30 days. This is not a regular mortgage. I'm the daughter of two real estate brokers. I grew up in real estate. I understand certainly what you're talking about. The issue is after somebody sees the papers for the first time, in many of these kinds of situations, should they have some time to think about it? And we think that they should. AARP was reluctant to go down to 10 days. Having, again, it's practice in the area of elder law. It is sometimes kids, it's sometimes somebody else. A senior does not have to check it out, but should they want to, they should. Because this is pulling out all the assets out of their house, maybe the only assets they have at the end of their lives, it is an important thing to be able to be spending time thinking about. So, members, I'd ask you to oppose the amendment.
Is there further discussion on the Limmer Amendment? Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I think you're all seeing those commercials right now that say, let your house take care of you. And people sitting back, living the good life, they've got a reverse mortgage. In this economy, or this economy, I guess, in many areas, has brought out some products and players into the market that are mostly focused on getting a commission. And not only that, Senator Clark's bill deals with then cross-selling or selling people maybe an annuity. And her bill says, no, you're going to do a reverse mortgage and that's it. I think it's really important protection for people. A reverse mortgage is absolutely a good product for some people. And I would have to say, though, that I think that it's not for everybody. And I think we all understand that as well. You know, this is the largest investment most of us make in our lifetime. And some people don't understand the ramifications of all the costs that accrue, for example. So the counseling is so important. And that, you know, when Senator Clark came in with the 30 days, I really was not convinced that 10 days was the right amount. I thought maybe 15 or 20. So I think we've compromised somewhat already, and I think, you know, this isn't like there's a buyer coming in and you're worrying about the title not being clear, or the seller trying to move someplace else and not having the title be clear. So I don't think you have any problems with title other than people just don't want people to have that chance to talk to family members and get some advice. And I'm with you. I wouldn't probably have been able to approach my dad about this kind of a thing. You know, he had his own mind. And a lot of people will feel that way. But this is going to give some added protection for those people that right now are being taken advantage of in this economic climate. So I urge members to oppose the amendment.
So further discussion on the amendment. Seeing none, the question occurs on the amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Is there further discussion on Senate File 489? Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Clark renews her motion. When this committee do arise, Senate File 489, as amended, be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails. Senator Pogamiller.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee do now rise and report.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The Senate will come to order. Senator Pogamiller.
Mr. President, I move that the report of the committee of the whole as kept by the Secretary be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Members, without objection, we'll revert to the fifth order of business, reports of committees. There is one report to be read by the Secretary.
Senator Bach from the Committee on Taxes, to which was re-referred Senate File 1328, a bill for an act relating to education, providing for policy and funding for early childhood, family, adult, and pre-kindergarten through grade 12 education, including general education. Reports the same back with the recommendation that the bill be amended, and when so amended, the bill do pass.
Senator Polgemiller, report of the committees. Adopt the committee report.
Mr. President, I move that the committee report just read be adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Sixth order of business, second reading of Senate bill, Senate file 1328 is given a second reading. Second reading. Announcements of Senate interest. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, I invite you, you have a handout on your desk, inviting you to an art show down in the North Hall today from 3:30 to 5:30. This is artwork that's been created by homeless youth, and there will be a number of the artists down there. So if you'd like an opportunity to come down, see the works of art, and talk to young people and those who work with them, please join us. Thank you.
Without objection, the following members will be excused from parts of today's session. Senator Jay Dahl from 11 o'clock to 11:30. Senator Sieben from 11 o'clock to 11:25. Senator Olson G from 12 noon until the end. Senator Parasol from 12 noon until the end. The announcements of Senate interest. Senator Senjum. No? Oh, Senator Marty. Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, the Health, Housing, and Family Security Committee will meet in about 15 minutes. The sooner we get there, the sooner we'll be done with the agenda.
Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, would the majority yield? Okay. Senator Polgemiller, on tomorrow, I'm not sure if you've come up with your final plan yet, but 8:30. So the question from the minority caucus would be, might there be a chance to caucus at 8:30 and talk so that we might talk a little bit about this K-12 bill, or would you want to do that? Tell you what, our preference is if we could convene at 8:30, if we could have a brief caucus, 30 to 45 minutes, and then take the bill up.
While they are conferring, the State Government Budget Division will meet 15 minutes after the end of this session. State Government Budget Division, 15 minutes after the session. Senator Higgins, did you have an announcement?
Mr. President, the Public Safety Budget Division will meet at its usual time and place.
Are there any other announcements of Senate interest at this time? Announcements of Senate interest.
Mr. President.
Senator Polgemiller.
Mr. President, so in consultation with Senator Senjum, here's what we'll do. We'll convene at 8:30, and then we will break, do whatever paperwork needs to be done. Then we'll break for a brief caucus, and then hopefully get back here by 9:15 or so, and then hopefully process the K-12 bill by 11 or noon, and then the committee meetings can get to work and finish their deadline day. So, Mr. President, I'd move that Senate adjourn till Tuesday, April 7th, 8:30 a.m.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The Senate is adjourned until Tuesday, April 7th, 8:30